That's what they're screaming down in southern Minnesota and parts of Iowa as they got hammered with just nasty, nasty snow, blizzard conditions from southern Minnesota into northern Iowa last night and this morning. And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Wednesday, March 5th, hump day. We're halfway to the weekend. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our traveling ag director, Bridget Riedel. I swear, we got to play a game instead of where's Waldo, where's Bridget? And
we could give it a little theme song. We could do giveaways for it. Whoever's closest to figuring out where Bridget is today, win a prize.
See, I like it. I like it.
Win a WDOI hat.
There you go.
Well, so I don't tell you where I'm at and I just let people guess. Is that what you guys want to do right now? See if you can catch anybody?
Well, I mean, you gave a clue yesterday, but the question is, are you still there? And you're not in the exact same place as you were yesterday either.
That is correct. So you got to tell me if I'm giving it away or if I'm holding fast right now.
701-293-9000. If anybody knows where Bridget is currently at, and I don't think the city is enough, you've got to give a more exact place. We'll give you WDAY hat for anybody that can guess where Bridget is today. So, but boy, Bridget, I'll tell you what. Talking to a lot of friends down in from Omaha through Des Moines and up into the Twin Cities, and they had power lines down. People lost power. The whole southwestern corner of Minnesota was basically closed. All the roads were closed this morning as blizzard. Good thing this was a quick moving storm, but they had anywhere from 6 to 10 inches of snow, but they had the 50 to 60 mile an hour winds with that as well. So not a historic storm, but a big storm. And the only thing we're seeing the effects out of that is the wind out of the north. It was quite breezy, still a little on the breezy side, up to about 30 miles an hour, but we'll take that compared to what they had down to the south. And we're going to look at quieter weather as well, heading our way over the next, let's say 4 to 5 days, as we've got temperatures today topping out in the mid-30s, still breezy with those winds out of the north, 15 to 25 and a little gusty at times. Tonight we'll have clear skies, we'll bottom out in the mid-teens, and then tomorrow, partly cloudy skies. Highs in the mid to upper 30s tomorrow with a northwest wind 10 to 20. Then lighter winds Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and we warm things up into the low 40s on Friday. Low to mid 40s on Saturday and upper 40s to near 50 as we head into Sunday. So, boy, I'll tell you, all in all, we lucked out and we've got a caller on. You want me to take this, Addison? All right. We got a caller on line one. Hello, caller. What's your name?
Hey, Nate Pullen. I have a guess on where Bridget Riedel might be.
Okay, where's Bridget at?
Maybe down in San Antonio at the North American Farm Show.
Oh, I like the guess, but Nate, no, that's not the right answer. But I like your guess. I like your guess. Thanks for calling, okay. Nate. San Antonio, that's a good guess, Bridget.
That's a good guess. That's probably where, if things pan out, I will be next year. For Commodity Classic, but as of right now, that is not my current location. Additionally, as you're talking about the weather, Dean, first of all, let's encourage folks to call us on the JLA Insurance phone line, 701-293-9000, to see if they can figure out where I'm currently at as I try to make sure I use the mute button effectively. But I've also gotten some weather reports from friends and travelers in Iowa where sounds like the western half of Iowa is nearly impassable at this point, mm-hmm. according to 511. Folks who are down there have run into a lot of problems. So far, most flights have gotten in and out of Minneapolis. At least they were still going through last night, but it's certainly taking quite a bit of time for de-icing as they're having to make sure each plane is taken care of. Then in Kansas, received a number of photos from folks where, especially if you had empty van trailers, semis, you know, 55-foot, with nothing inside the trailer, those were being blown over in the wind yesterday. There were pretty heavily sustained winds of a minimum of 70 miles an hour. I saw it described as a Hura blizzard just due to some of the snow, and certainly because they don't have as much snow cover, they have a lot of blowing soil in the air as well. So you're right. That southern area is taking a beating right now. Glad it's a fast-moving storm so that'll pass through, and much like us, maybe their temperatures will warm up by Monday.
Actually, those areas will be in the 50s and 60s by Monday. Even with the snow cover, I think they'll be in the 50s. So that's going to be a pretty quick melt. But that's much-needed moisture down there, too. They've been pretty dry, so it's been pretty warm. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing because then a lot of this moisture will just soak in. And mark your calendars, as Gary was telling us yesterday when you had him on with you, that this whole system is going to be back around April 14th, mid-April, again, give or take a couple days. Just mark your calendar. Now, odds are there's a good 70-80% chance that when this storm cycles back in the next LRC cycle, this is going to affect the northern plains instead of the central plains. Now, does that mean we're going to get a blizzard here? Not necessarily, but I do imagine somewhere nearby, whether it's South Dakota or the western part of North Dakota, somebody's going to get some pretty nasty weather out of this. And regardless, it looks like we'll get the moisture out of it. So that is good news there because we definitely need the moisture.
I think folks will take what they can get, but at this point, you know, I talked to actually my family farm this morning in South Central North Dakota. Calving is underway, which thankfully they've had about three sets of twins so far. But the beauty in that right now is even if it's cold, it's been dry. They want to get a lot of calving out of the way. So if you want to wait until after we get through calving and bring that in the form of rainfall, I don't think that would be a sad opportunity either. But one of the things to keep in mind is when you are calving in these conditions, you know, yesterday, so cold, such brutal wind for many places. Got to get those calves in fast so you don't freeze any ears and tails. You got about a half hour before frostbite starts to cause damage.
Right. Yeah. It's that time of the year. You get those volatile systems coming in during the spring. I mean, blizzards are not unheard of in the central northern plains this time of the year. So, and again, according to the LRC, we've got a system coming in right around next weekend and then probably another one before the month ends and then another one in early April and then that other one coming around mid-April. So pretty active weather pattern, which is, again, is good news. And if you want to know more what the spring looks like, you could log on to our webpage, WDAYRadioNow.com, and we've got the LRC calendar up there. Posted that a couple days ago, so you can kind of get an idea of how much moisture for the ag community that we're going to get. And right now, it looks like pretty good news all the way through through May. So the only thing I'm worried about is there's a large spike in heavy precip in early May. Now, you probably want to get the crops planted before that if we can, Bridget, because our last frost is supposed to be right around April 20th. I know that's not a huge window, but it looks like after that first week, that's when the first week in May, then we'll start to kind of temper things down just a bit.
Well, okay, so a couple things to consider. The first week of May isn't the end of the situation.
Right.
We can certainly plant well into May. For probably the last 2 out of 3 years, we've had soybeans get planted right around the 4th of July. So that does happen. That's not everybody's favorite, and we really have to hope for a long fall at that point. Also, when you talk about the last frost, that's fine because we won't have much for crop that would be up and out of the ground. That's what the frost would affect. Mm-hmm. So if we have the opportunity for snow to be off, for the ground to thaw out some, we can start planting fairly early. There's a lot of years where we see soybeans going in after corn, but that is changing. And I've started to see more soybeans go in earlier. And hold on. Just wanted to avoid the talking in the background if I possibly can, because I don't think anybody else cares where the other folks are traveling to today. but besides, when you are looking at that time frame, also understand that, you know, you want to watch for your soil temperatures. Last year, it worked out that we had a wet spell right around the 1st of May. There were folks who took that opportunity to get in early, get planted, and that turned out well for them.
Excellent, excellent. And we'll see how that pans out this year. But when we come back, we're coming up on break now. When we come back, we're going to have Clayton Dieter. Clayton is, we go way back. He's one of my old high school classmates. And I was going through Facebook, and I noticed Clayton is starting up a farm. He's got livestock, and he's just diving into the business, if you will. So I said, hey, Clayton, you know, would you mind if we have you on? Would love to get your take on what it's like now to get into the ag industry. And Bridget, maybe you can give him some tips if he needs them, or maybe he'll give us some tips.
Well, I would say we need to know how long he's been operating this whole situation. I've got lots of questions for Clayton, but I would venture a guess he's probably got a pretty good grip on what he's doing. So let's visit with Clayton when we return.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Wednesday, March 5th, and temperatures outside hanging in the low 30s right now with those wind chills in the teens. And our guest today is one of my old classmates going way back. Clayton Dieter. Clayton, should we say what year we graduated? I don't want to age us.
Well, you can go for it, Dean. Why not?
Yeah, a class of 85. We went to school back in the suburbs of Chicago, and I'll tell you what, you know, it was a small community, and there wasn't a lot of farming. I mean, we were in a large farming area, but from what I recall, Clayton, I don't recall a lot of our classmates being in farming. So where did the path of life bring you to where you're at right now, where you're just starting your own farm right now? Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, so you're right. Back in our town back in the day, it was kind of a farming community on the road to becoming a suburb, right? And I remember a couple of classmates maybe who did some farming, but I wasn't one of them. Since you let the cat out of the bag on the year we graduated, I'm just wondering if I'm too old to get into this thing, because it seems like maybe I am. But no, it's something that I've thought about and kind of had a desire to do for a long, long time. My youngest son is just about to turn 25. He also had some desire to get into maybe raising some beef cows. So we decided, hey, let's just do it. Kind of the thought process, you know, I hear people on interviews and most of them say, you know, we're the third generation or fourth generation, or we've been doing it for 70 plus years. We've been doing it for about a month now. So we're just getting started, but, yeah, it's just something that we've thought that we'd like to do. So we got some fences up and just started getting ready to do it. Basically, my thought process is eventually I'll be retiring from my regular job, and I'd like to have something to do after I retire that will help keep me young. And maybe this will keep me young. Maybe it'll kill me. I don't know, but it's going to be one or the other probably.
And we've got some pictures, Addison, if you can put up of his livestock. It looks like this is one of your youngest calves right here.
Yeah, that one, that calf was just born early January. So we'll be turning that into steaks here in a couple of years.
All right. That's
and Bridget, long process.
Bridget, what advice would you have to give? And Bridget's our ag director, Clay. What advice would you have to give Clayton for, you know, just starting this out over the last within the last year?
Oh, I don't think I have any advice quite yet, but I think we have a lot of questions. So, Clayton, if you can tell me, I heard why you decided you wanted to invest and buy, and again, kind of a great project and income opportunity after you retire. But more importantly, were you striving to just raise livestock? Do you just have cattle? Give us a little insight into what it is that you'll be doing for that relaxation these days.
Yeah, just cattle, at least for now. I mean, who knows if we'll add anything in the future, but for now, just cattle. We've kind of decided to focus on Wagyu and see what we can learn along the way and what makes sense. And kind of part of the thought process is we just don't want to lose any money. That's the main goal, the initial goal. We're trying to set our goals very achievable so that we don't get too discouraged. But, you know, the thought process is we're not someone that's jumping in and going to buy 500 head of beef. So we're going to go for something that's a little bit higher price tag And the thing that I'm finding out is you pretty much need to go back to college to learn about genetics when you start raising beef and maybe especially Wagyu.
Well, I was going to say that's probably some pretty big learning curves in itself. And are you, first of all, was this a farm that they operated beef animals beforehand, or was it a new addition for you to bring the beef onto the operation?
Yeah, it's all new. So kind of a couple of people to help us along the way. My father-in-law raised beef for all of his growing up years. He hasn't had any for several years, but so he's got a bit of knowledge he's been able to share with me. My wife has a cousin who's down the road, and he raises Dexter beef. And so I've been able to, you know, borrow things from him when I need to, and especially borrow his knowledge. And he's kind of given us advice along the way on setting up our fencing and all of that. Obviously, it's not to jump into this beef industry is not an easy thing to do. And, you know, to jump in with both feet is an extremely expensive maneuver to make. So we're going to go one step at a time. We're going to kind of crawl before we walk, figure out what we can do, what we're good at, make sure that we're getting it. So far, we've most launched this thing in the winter. We've got our fencing ready pretty much throughout the fall and shelter, and then, you know, brought these cows in the middle of the coldest months. So, and we've really enjoyed it. So I figure if we've really enjoyed it in the coldest months, maybe it'll just get better. But yeah, that's our goal is to just grow. You know, there's a lot of barriers to entry in this market. And most of them have to do with land and equipment, you know, being pretty high cost, but the beef market is good. I think the Wagyu market is going to be very good. It's a growing market. So, you know, like I said, we're not looking to get rich off of this. We're looking to grow it to a point where we can sell some cows, maybe supplement income, and just have a fun time doing it.
And Clayton, we were talking. Go ahead, Bridget.
Yeah, just a quick question. Clayton, are you going with registered Wagyu, or are you doing a crossbreed mix?
Well, they're registered Wagyu. They are a cross, technically. So the calves on the ground are F2 Wagyu. Our cows are F1 Wagyu. So I'd love for us to get to the point where we're maybe going towards full blood. Just for those who don't know, and you Wagyu, there are percentages that equate to what the Wagyu is. Our cows are F1s. They're 50% Angus and 50% Wagyu. The calves are going to be F2, so they'll be 75% Wagyu, 25% Angus. And if you go the next step, you get to F3, and then you get to pure blood, and then you get to full blood. So the full blood is 100% Wagyu, and that's the kind of the top of the line that you can get. But even when you're getting into the F1s and F2s, you're still producing some really high quality meat, a lot of intermuscular fat, high omega-3, high omega-6 fatty acids that are really healthy. So you start to get into some things that are a little more expensive than your average Angus. If we're not going to have huge numbers of cattle, I figure it's probably better if we have cattle that we can sell for a little higher price.
Good deal. And Clayton, we're at the bottom of the hour, so we're going to have to take a quick break. But when we come back, you just had was this your first calf that you've had on the farm?
Absolutely.
It is. Okay. Yep. So when we come back, I've got a couple of questions on calving season and, you know, how difficult was it? I know we were just talking just the other day on air about Bridget was showing us this big contraption that you use for calving. I said, I've never seen anything like that. So we'll talk about that and more right after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus on this Wednesday, March 5th. Our guest today, Clayton Dieter. Clayton started up within the last year his own farm. It's basically livestock, like he was saying. And Clayton, this is the first time you've had to go through calving season. What was it like? Were there any surprises? Was it as hard as you thought? Was it easier than you thought? Step us through it.
Well, so far, no surprises and nothing difficult. So there's still some time to go yet for more challenges, but so far, so good. You know, we basically we keep cameras on our pasture and on our barn and just keep an eye on the cows all the time, but we're out there quite a bit. And what happened with our first cow is that when she gave birth, we came out and there was a calf on the ground. So that's the way you want it to work. You know, and so we'll see how it goes. Hopefully that's always the case and we don't have to pull any calves. Of course, if we do, we do. You know, the interesting thing in trying to learn more about Wagyu is kind of studying how they do it in Japan. And in Japan, they don't really breed for calf size so much, or even the milking ability. They breed strictly for marbling and they pull a lot of calves in Japan. But the breed here in the U.S. Has kind of been bred so that calving is pretty easy. So thankfully, hopefully, we'll continue to have, you know, some calving ease and we'll just find calves on the ground. That's ideal.
Well, let's say that that's not the situation every time, Clayton. Have you been able to set up a relationship with a local veterinarian and kind of given him the overview or him or her of what you're doing and where you're located in case you need to call for some help?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, we do have a local vet and same vet that we're going to be working with because we'll be doing either AI or ET for when these cows are ready to get pregnant again. And so that'll be a whole new thing too, is trying to get these cows bred. But yeah, same vet. They're really well set up to help with anything and everything that we need, including AI and ET.
And when you've had that discussion with your veterinarian, does that also include a nutritionalist somewhere in the neighborhood? Because I know you want to breed for marbling. You want to make sure that you're bringing the best quality beef forward at the time of slaughter. And so have you had an opportunity to visit with someone about what your rations should look like, et cetera?
Yeah, that's something that's part of the work in process and learn as we go. So far, everything's been from reading and trying to educate ourselves, but that is coming up. In fact, later this week, I have a meeting to discuss some of those topics, you know, because we do want to not only breed for genetics, which is what we're doing, but we want to feed for marbling as well and for the quality of the carcass. So we kind of have some ideas of what we might want to do until someone smarter tells us that we're wrong and we should do it different. And that won't be hard to convince us because I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people smarter than us at this. But yeah, we're meeting with someone this week to kind of discuss nutrition in a little deeper manner.
Oh, I don't think anybody's going to say that they're smarter than you or anything like that, but they may be just going to give you quite a number of options that could be useful in what you're doing. And what about, I think over, as we talked about feed, nutritionalists, are you going to need to get into the hay business? Are you looking to buy corn? What is that going to appear for you? You know, I know you mentioned you have some family in the neighborhood. Are you just able to buy feedstock, or how's that going to work for you to get started on all this, Clayton?
Yeah, hay is easy, pretty easy for us because we've got some on the property, and we've got relatives who I help bale hay, so we do have access to plenty of hay. That's not a problem, and we have corn that we're not growing our own corn, but we have access to corn. And my plan until I learn differently is to feed whole corn. And I know that some of it is lost, gets through the rumen. But from studies I've read, it seems like that's feeding whole corn is pretty beneficial to helping with the marbling. But I'll see if my mind changes after some discussions with nutritionists.
Well, one of the things that I know when you talk to the producers in Japan, they mentioned beer. Have you factored beer into your rations yet?
Well, probably we're probably going to give them some spent grain. Not quite the same as feeding them beer. I've offered beer to them, and they don't seem that interested. but no, we can
hey, maybe
we can get some.
Ale, not a lager type, Clayton. Maybe you just got to change up the type of beer.
You might be onto something. That's a good idea, Bridget. I got to try a different brand of beer, maybe. But we do have some access to some distillers grain and some spent grain from local brewery. So we'll probably feed some grain, spent grain to them as well.
And Clayton, like I said, you've been doing this for what, almost a year or not quite a year? Is that correct?
Not quite. We probably got started 6 months or so ago.
Okay. What's the biggest obstacle so far? And I know it's early, but what's the biggest obstacle that you've had to overcome?
Well, cost is the biggest obstacle for sure. I mean, and the biggest cost obstacles, really it's equipment and land. The Wagyu cows are pretty expensive too, compared to some other breeds. Right now, pretty much any breed is not cheap, but, that's kind of almost the least, cost impact to entry. I mean, it'd be different if we were buying, 200 head, but we're not. So really it's fencing, and it's cattle chutes and it's tubs and gates and things to move them around. Equipment is a big expense. So I would say that the biggest challenge is the cost to get the thing rolling, starting from zero, there's a whole lot of input costs. So probably that's the biggest issue. Land is also a big issue. It's really expensive here and there's not a lot of it, that is for sale. And when it is, it's pretty expensive because it goes to two things around here. It goes to either development, which there's not a lot of right now, but it also goes to people who are farming. But in this area, as you well know, Dean, it's corn and beans. Mm-hmm. And so the ground is pretty valuable for planting corn and beans. So it makes it a little more difficult than somewhere like Texas or Montana for getting acres to raise beef on.
Right. Now, and for those that don't know, you're starting off, talking to your wife and, hey, let's start, let's get some livestock. For those that don't know, where do you go to get your livestock? Is it at auction up in the Chicago area, or where's the best place for you guys to get that?
Because we're breed specific, most of it's online. What we've got, I bought in Kentucky. So I actually had to bring them up from Kentucky. But that was a little closer than what I was finding in Texas or Oklahoma. So basically finding them online and buying them from individual breeders to bring them up. Really not going to sale barns and trying to find them there because you don't find a lot of Wagyu at the sale barns.
Okay.
Right, and especially for commercial breed like that where you're looking at registered stock, that you're going to want to trade in between folks who are on the same playing field there. And you make a good point, Clayton, about the difference between what you're going to pay for farmland versus pasture land. Usually pasture land is a lot lower productivity rating. It would not withstand some of the planting conditions that you have and is much more of a native prairie grass or just a native planted grass. So I can see why it makes a little bit of a difference how much land you can buy and acquire based on price tag when it rated maybe more of a farmland productivity for corn and soybean versus pasture. So I see your challenge, I'm afraid.
Absolutely, Bridget, you're spot on. And kind of one of the encouraging things is as I look at this, I also have a son who lives in Japan. We'll be going out there this fall to kind of and maybe look at some of the way they raise beef out there. But they put a whole lot of cattle on very small pieces of land out there. So I figure if they can do it out there, then maybe we can do it here. It's just a question of how much more we have to feed them.
Absolutely. Once you know your rations, you'll be able to figure out what that needs to look like based on your land mass as well. Absolutely.
And let's say 5 years from now, Clayton, how big do you want your herd to get?
Boy, that's a tough question. I just want it to kind of exponentially grow. If we end up with 30 head, I'd be happy.
Actually, I want to know if it's not just going to be cattle, but how long until you get sheep and geese and some chickens? What's that going to look like?
Yeah, chickens may be next. I'm not ready for anything other than cattle right now, but I could see chickens because I think they're a pretty good benefit to eating parasites out of the pasture and that sort of thing. Sheep, sheep would have been easier and more profitable probably to raise than cattle, at least around here. I think that's the consensus per animal unit. But I just wanted to raise beef because I really like to eat beef, and I like cows, I guess.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you at farm shows when it's time for you to start looking for new equipment and wanting to pick up another loader, tractor, et cetera, because it seems to me like you said, you have to borrow things, but sooner or later, you'll be on the market for shopping.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Clayton, thank you so much for joining us. Great to catch up. And next time I'm in the Chicagoland area visiting some friends over there, I'll let you know. We'll buzz down and see your operation. That'd be great.
Yeah, let's do it for sure, Dean. Thank you both for coming. Dean, come over, and we can have a beer while we're standing there looking out over the cattle.
That sounds like a deal. That sounds like a deal. Well, Clayton, thanks again for joining us, and we'll have a recap on the weather. We'll hit a couple of ag topics when we come back after the break. I'll give you a hint. We've got some warmer weather finally heading our way after a couple of cold days. We'll detail all of that and more coming up after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. It's 1:50 in the afternoon, and temperatures outside in the lower 30s right now. We'll tick it up a few more degrees into the mid-30s, and still a little bit on the breezy side out there, while a blizzard passes or has passed to our south. And now, Bridget, I see you're another gate change, and is weather affecting where you're at right now?
Nope. Do you have I'm seeing bright, sunny skies all around me.
Do you have a direct flight home?
I do.
Lucky. Lucky.
Yep. Yep. So for those who didn't guess, I'm just in the Denver airport, probably one of the nice spots in the airport. But for right now, things look good here. There are a number of folks that are trying to get into more eastern states, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois, et cetera, that are going to experience quite a bit of trouble on their way. So I'm hoping for the best for all of those folks. As you were talking earlier about what's going to be happening weather-wise, I might suggest that, you mark down, we're going to see some weather changes mid-March. But another date for you to mark down is March 26th. That'll be at the Fargo Theater. Common Ground, which is an organization of volunteer farm women, and those are women who farm, by the way. It's not just those who participate a little bit in the farm. It's those actively involved and are passionate about connecting consumers to farming and food. They are hosting a movie at the Fargo Theater, and again, that is going to be on March 26th. The film is called From the Heartland, and it highlights the Midwest's commitment to agriculture and food production. There are free screenings in multiple cities, actually, in North Dakota. You'll be in Minot on March 9th, Grand Forks on March 13th at the Empire Arts Center, and then April 3rd in Bismarck. This is an opportunity to not only see the movie, for the Fargo event, I will be hosting a farmer panel afterwards to do Q&A with those in the audience and attendance who might want to visit about farming techniques and practices and what we do. And there are area farmers prominently featured in the film as well. So again, mark your calendars for March 26th at Fargo Theater. That will be a movie hosted by Common Ground, and the movie's called From the Heartland. Looking forward to having people join us there. That would be excellent if you could.
Great. Great. Good deal. So, hopefully the weather cooperates.
I'm hoping so. It's towards the end of the month at that point. Other things to keep in mind that right now we are getting reminders from Nationwide Insurance because 2024 was another deadly year when it comes to grain bin entrapments. There were 27 entrapments. 16 folks did pass away as a result of those entrapments. To help reduce the numbers, Nationwide is offering the opportunity to nominate local fire departments to receive free grain bin rescue tubes. That tube also comes with an auger and training on how to use it. The tubes literally can be used by firefighters to get into a grain bin where someone is engulfed in grain, and the pressure can literally squeeze you and crush you to death. And so the tubes are able to be placed around that person, grain sucked away from them, so you can harness that person and haul them out of that bin. So hopefully we can continue to rescue more lives. Again, you can apply for grants in order to receive the grain tubes. This is through Nationwide Insurance. We do have a number of fire departments in the area that have these tubes, but not everybody does. 390 fire departments in 32 states have received tubes in the last few years, and they are credited with saving at least 13 lives while using them. So great big thank you to Nationwide Insurance. We hope to see that they continue that great work. Much appreciated. Now, while I've been down here at Commodity Classic, one of the things that was highlighted was AGI Westfield has an extend retracting swing auger. All right, so for those of you who are familiar with loading or unloading grain at a farm, you're going to see these swing augers. They're like short sub arc augers that you're going to use that you can put underneath a truck if you're unloading from the center fill on the bottom of a truck, and you're going to use those little jump augers in order to auger up to the larger auger into the bin. The reason these swing augers are so helpful, this little extend auger is available in a 13-inch or a 16-inch model, and it can extend from 84 feet to 114. Safety is the discussion point of the day, and what we're trying to do with this is prevent people from having to get in and out of the truck so many times when they're trying to position trailers and augers, et cetera, because accidents happen as you're getting in and out of trucks, particularly in winter conditions when things might be icy or snowed over. Then you're also not lifting or bending or pushing it with your body and hurting your back when you're trying to move some of these little augers. And frankly, if you have some newer or inexperienced drivers that need some help, this is a little bit easier. Maybe it's a tight area. Those folks are not going to accidentally run over the hopper auger if you are using something like this little extend auger. So check those out if that's a piece of equipment you might want for the 2025 growing season as you get ready to plant your crop.
All right. Well, and it's going to be a crop planting time eventually, although you never know it out there right now. But we do have some nicer weather that's heading our way. In fact, as we head into the rest of the week, we're looking at temperatures starting to warm up. In fact, temperatures currently, as I said, in the low 30s. We'll tick it up a few more degrees into the mid-30s today and then drop it off into the teens tonight. And then we're back into the mid to upper 30s tomorrow with a little bit of a breeze out of the northwest, about 10 to 20. Winds will go lighter as we head into Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And 40s Friday and Saturday, upper 40s to near 50 on Sunday, and we could be close. I don't think we'll hit 60, but I think we'll be in the mid to upper 50s on Monday. And then cooler weather slowly settles in next week, and then we're still keeping an eye on a potential major storm the following weekend. So mid-month, it looks like there's a potential of a major precip as we head into that. Unfortunately, that weekend of St. Paddy's Day. So it's going to be over either North or South Dakota. The models are going back and forth on that. We know it's going to be there according to the LRC, but the exact track of that we'll have to keep a close eye on. So if you have plans for next weekend, not this weekend, but the following for St. Paddy's Day weekend, keep up to date on the forecast.
Well, as you're thinking about St. Patrick's Day, beer probably comes to mind. And craft beer that's made in the area generally takes a lot of its flavor from barley, and that's grown here on North Dakota fields. Barley acres are down right now simply because we are seeing more folks drinking seltzers and brown liquors like bourbons and whiskeys than we are beer. But because we have a great barley breeding system at North Dakota State University, there are several varieties that have been very unique to flavors here in the craft beer market, at least for this region. So beer, everyone has a recipe for it, right? And the flagship beers know exactly which varieties they want to be using. North Dakota has varieties like ND Genesis, AAC Synergy, and ABI Cardinal from Anheuser-Busch. These have been top-yielding varieties for two-row barley. It's very characteristic of them to have a plump kernels. Malt barley really wants the plump because it works for better formulation when they're making the beer. Also, they want low protein, and most growers are familiar with that. If you're above a 13%, your barley could be rejected for too high a protein. And then it is an option to sell it as a feed barley at a significant discount. Feed barleys can be used for a lot of livestock. They're actually fairly prevalent in dog food. to be honest. I don't know if you all realize that, but there can be a lot of barley used for dog food as well. And we like these varieties that are coming out of North Dakota because if we have heavy dews or rain during harvest, there's a good chance that varieties can sprout. And so we're trying to avoid that with some of these varieties that are bred here in North Dakota. You want it to, you want the barley to sprout when you're making beer, not when it's standing in the field. That makes a difference.
Good point. Good point. We got to get more people drinking beer, right? Especially with green beer as we head towards St. Paddy's Day. Well, for Bridget and myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us here on Weather and Ag in Focus. Bridget, safe travels back home. And we will see you guys tomorrow. Thanks for joining us, but don't go anywhere yet. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.